was flushed and ruddy. "Too much wine," the Queen concluded, though he was doing the best to conceal that. Apart from the line of copper suns that ornamented his belt, the Dornishman was plainly dressed.
"They call him Frog," Danny recalled.
She could see why. He was not a handsome man. She smiled.
"My prince, it's a long way down. Are you certain that you wish to do this?"
"If it would please your grace."
"Then come."
A pair of unsullied went down the steps before them, bearing torches. Behind came two brazen beasts, one masked as a fish, the other as a hawk. Even here in her own pyramid, on this happy night of peace and celebration, Sir Barristan insisted on keeping guards about her everywhere she went. The small company made the long descent in silence, stopping thrice to refresh themselves along the way.
"The dragon has three heads," Danny said,
when they were on the final flight.
"My marriage need not be the end of all your hopes. I know why you're here." "For you," said Quentin, all awkward gallantry. "No," said Danny, "for fire and blood."
One of the elephants trumpeted at them from his stall. An answering roar from below made her flush with sudden heat. Prince Quentin looked up in alarm.
"The dragons know when she is near," Sir Barristan told him.
"Every child knows its mother," Danny thought. "When the seas go dry and mountains blow in the wind like leaves, they call to me. Come."
She took Prince Quentin by the hand and led him to the pit where two of her dragons were confined.
"Remain outside,"
Danny told Sir Barristan, as the unsullied were opening the huge iron doors.
"Prince Quentin will protect me."
She drew the Dornish prince inside with her to stand above the pit. The dragons craned their necks around, gazing at them with burning eyes. Viserion had shattered one chain and melted the others. He clung to the roof of the pit like some huge white bat. His claws dug deep into the burnt and crumbling bricks. Rhaegal, still chained, was gnawing on the carcass of a bull. The bones on the floor of the pit were deeper than the last time she had been down here, and the walls and floors were black and grey, more ash than brick. They would not hold much longer, but behind them was only earth and stone.
"Can dragons tunnel through rock, like the fireworms of old Valyria?"
She hoped not. The Dornish prince had gone as white as milk.
I had heard that there were three. Drogon is hunting."
He did not need to hear the rest.
"The white one is Viserion. The green is Rhaegal. I named them for my brothers."
Her voice echoed off the scorched stone walls. It sounded small. A girl's voice, not the voice of a queen and conqueror, nor the glad voice of a new-made bride. Rhaegal roared in answer, and fire filled the pit. A spear of red and yellow. Viserion replied, his own flames gold and orange. When he flapped his wings, a cloud of grey ash filled the air. Broken chains clanked and clattered about his legs. Quentin Martell jumped back a foot. A crueler woman might have laughed at him, but Danny squeezed his hand and said,
"They frighten me as well. There is no shame in that. My children have grown wild and angry in the dark."
You mean to ride them?"
"One of them.
All I know of dragons is what my brother told me when I was a girl. And some I read in books, but it is said that even Aegon the Conqueror never dared mount Vhagar or Meraxes, nor did his sisters ride Beleriand the Black Dread. Dragons live longer than men, some for hundreds of years, so Beleriand had other riders after Aegon died. But no rider ever flew two dragons."
Viserion hissed again. Smoke rose between his teeth, and deep down in his throat they could see gold fire churning.
They are fearsome creatures.
They are dragons, Quentin.
Danny stood on her toes and kissed him lightly, once on each cheek.
And so am I.
The young prince swallowed. I have the blood of the dragon in me as well, your grace. I can trace my lineage back to the first Daenerys, the Targaryen princess, who was sister to King Daeron the Good, and wife to the Prince of Dorne. He built the water gardens for her.
The water gardens?
She knew little and less of Dorne or its history, if truth be told.
My father's favourite palace. It would please me to show them to you one day. They are all of pink marble, with pools and fountains overlooking the sea.
They sound lovely.
She drew him away from the pit.
He does not belong here. He should never have come. You ought to return there. My court is no safe place for you, I fear. You have more enemies than you know. You made Dario look a fool, and he's not a man to forget such a slight.
I have my knights, my sworn shields.
Two knights. Dario has 500 storm crows. And you would do well to beware of my lord husband, too. He seems a mild and pleasant man, I know, but do not be deceived. His star's crown derives from mine, and he commands the allegiance of some of the most fearsome fighters in the world. If one of them should think to win his favour by disposing of a rival...
I am a prince of Dorne, your grace. I will not run from slaves and sellswords.
Then you truly are a fool, Prince Frog.
Danny gave her wild children one last lingering look. She could hear the dragon screaming as she led the boy back to the door, and see the play of light against the bricks, reflections of their fires.
If I look back, I am lost. Sir Barristan will have summoned a pair of sedan chairs to carry us back up to the banquet. But the climb can still be wearisome.
Behind them, the great iron doors closed with a resounding clang.
Tell me of this other Daenerys. I know less than I should of the history of my father's kingdom. I never had a maester growing up, only a brother.
It would be my pleasure, your grace, said Quentin.
It was well past midnight before the last of their guests took their leave, and Danny retired to her own apartments to join her lord and king. His Dar at least was happy, if somewhat drunk.
I keep my promises, he told her, as Iria and Jiqui were robing them for bed. You wished for peace, and it is yours. And you wish for blood, and soon enough I must give it to you,
Danny thought. But what she said was,
I am grateful.
The excitement of the day had inflamed her husband's passions. No sooner had her handmaids retired for the night than he tore the robe from her and tumbled her backwards into bed. Danny slid her arms around him and let him have his way. Drunk as he was, she knew he would not be inside her long. Nor was he. Afterward, he nuzzled at her ear and whispered, God's grant that we have made a son tonight. The words of Miri Mazdur rang in her head.
When the sun rises in the west and sets in the east, when the seas go dry and mountains blow in the wind like leaves, when your womb quickens again and you bear a living child, then he will return, and not before.
The meaning was plain enough. Khal Drogo was as like to return from the dead as she was to bear a living child. But there are some secrets she could not bring herself to share, even with a husband. So she let Hisdar Zolorik keep his hopes. Her noble husband was soon fast asleep. Daenerys could only twist and turn beside him. She wanted to shake him, wake him, make him hold her, kiss her, fuck her again. But even if he did, he would fall back to sleep again afterwards, leaving her alone in the darkness. She wondered what Dario was doing.
Was he restless as well? Was he thinking about her? Did he love her, truly? Did he hate her for marrying Hisdar?
I should never have taken him into my bed.
He was only a sellsword, no fit consort for a queen, and yet...
I knew that all along, but I did it anyway.
My queen, said a soft voice in the darkness. Danny flinched.
Who is there? Only Miss Andy.
The Nahti scribe moved closer to the bed.
This one heard you crying. Crying? I was not crying. Why would I cry? I have my peace. I have my king. I have everything a queen might wish for. He had a bad dream, that was all.
As you say, your grace. She bowed and made to go.
Stay, said Danny. I do not wish to be alone. His grace is with you,
Miss Andy pointed out.
His grace is dreaming, but I cannot sleep. On the morrow I must bathe in blood, the price of peace.
She smiled wanly and patted the bed.
Come, sit. Talk with me. If it please you.
Miss Andy sat down beside her.
What shall we talk of? Home, said Danny. Nath, butterflies and brothers. Tell me of the things that make you happy, the things that make you giggle. All your sweetest memories. Remind me that there is still good in the world.
Miss Andy did her best. She was still talking when Danny finally fell to sleep, to dream queer, half-formed dreams of smoke and fire. The morning came too soon. Theon. Day stole upon them just as Stannis had, on the scene. Winterfell had been awake for hours, its battlements and towers crammed with men in wool and mail and leather, awaiting an attack that never came. By the time the sky began to lighten, the sound of drums had faded away, though war horns were heard thrice more, each time a little closer. And still the snow fell.
"A storm will end today,"
one of the surviving stable boys was insisting loudly.
"Why, it isn't even winter."
Theon would have laughed if he had dared. He remembered tales old Nan had told them of storms that raged for 40 days and 40 nights, for a year, for 10 years. Storms that buried castles and cities and whole kingdoms under 100 feet of snow. He sat in the back of the great hall, not far from the horses, watching Abel, Rowan, and a mousy, brown-haired washerwoman called Squirrel attack slabs of stale brown bread fried in bacon grease. Theon broke his own fast with a tankard of dark ale, cloudy with yeast and thick enough to chew on. A few more tankards, and perhaps Abel's plan might not seem quite so mad. Roose Bolton entered, pale-eyed and yawning, accompanied by his plump and pregnant wife, Fat Walder. Several lords and captains had preceded him, amongst them Horsbane Umber, Aenys Frey, and Roger Risewell. Farther down the table, Wyman Manderley sat wolfing down sausages and boiled eggs, whilst old Lord Locke beside him spooned gruel into his toothless mouth. Lord Ramsay soon appeared as well, buckling on his sword-belt as he made his way to the front of the hall.
"His mood is foul this morning," Theon could tell. "The drums kept him awake all night," he guessed, "or someone has displeased him."
One wrong word, an ill-considered look, an ill-timed laugh, any of them could provoke his lordship's wrath and cost a man a strip of skin.
"Please, my lord, don't look this way."
One glance would be all it would take for Ramsay to know everything.
"He'll see it written on my face. He'll know. He always knows."
Theon turned to Abel.
"This will not work."
His voice was pitched so low
that even the horses could not have overheard. We will be caught before we leave the castle. Even if we do escape, Lord Ramsay will hunt us down, him and Ben Bones and the girls.
Lord Stannis is outside the walls, and not far by the sound of it. All we need do is reach him.
Abel's fingers danced across the strings of his lute. The singer's beard was brown, though his long hair had largely gone to grey.
If the bastard does come after us, he might live long enough to rue it.
Think that, Theon thought. Believe that. Tell yourself it's true. Ramsay will use your women as his prey, he told the singer. He'll hunt them down, rape them, and feed their corpses to his dogs. If they lead him a good chase, he may name his next litter of bitches after them. You, Ilflair, him and Skinner, and Daemon Dance for me, they will make a game of it. You'll be begging them to kill you.
He clutched the singer's arm with a maimed hand.
You swore you would not let me fall into his hands again. I have your word on that.
He needed to hear it again.
Abel's word, said Squirrel, strong as oak.
Abel himself only shrugged.
No matter what, my prince.
Up on the dais, Ramsay was arguing with his father. They were too far away for Theon to make out any of the words, but the fear on Fat Alder's round pink face spoke volumes.
He did hear Wyman Manderley calling for more sausages, and Roger Risewell's laughter at some jape from one-armed Harwood Stout. Theon wondered if he would ever see the drowned guard's watery halls, or if his ghost would linger here at Winterfell.
Dead is dead. Better dead than reek.
If Abel's scheme went awry, Ramsay would make their dying long and hard.
He will flay me from head to heel this time, and no amount of begging will end the anguish.
No pain Theon had ever known came close to the agony that Skinner could evoke with a little flensing blade. Abel would learn that lesson soon enough. And for what?
Jane. Her name is Jane, and her eyes are the wrong colour.
A mummer playing a part.
Lord Bolton knows, and Ramsay, but the rest are blind. Even this bloody bard with his sly smiles. The jape is on you, Abel. You and your murdering horse. You'll die for the wrong girl.
He had come this close to telling them the truth when Rowan had delivered him to Abel in the ruins of the burned tower. But at the last instant he had held his tongue. The singer seemed intent on making off with the daughter of Eddard Stark. If he knew that Lord Ramsay's bride was but a Stuart's whelp, well. The doors of the great hall opened with a crash. A cold wind came swirling through, and a cloud of ice crystals sparkled blue-white in the air. Through it strode Sir Hustine Frey, caked in snow to the waist, a body in his arms. All along the benches, men put down their cups and spoons to turn and gape at the grisly spectacle. The hall grew quiet.
Another murder.
Snow slid from Sir Hustin's cloaks as he stalked towards the high table, his steps ringing against the floor. A dozen Frey knights and men-at-arms entered behind him. One was a boy Theon knew, Big Walder, the little one, fox-faced and skinny as a stick. His chest and arms and cloak were spattered with blood. The scent of it set the horses to screaming. Dogs slid out from under the tables, sniffing. Men rose from the benches. In the torchlight, the body in Sir Hustin's arms sparkled, armored in pink frost. The cold outside had frozen his blood.
"My brother Merritt's son,"
Hustine Frey lowered the body to the floor before the dais.
"Butchered, like a hog, and shoved beneath a snowbank. A boy."
"Little Walder," thought Theon. "The big one." He glanced at Rowan.
"There are six of them," he remembered. "Any of them could have done this.
but the washerwoman felt his eyes.
"This was no work of ours," she said. "Be quiet," Abel warned her.
Lord Ramsay descended from the dais to the dead boy. His father rose more slowly, pale-eyed, still-faced, solemn. "This was foul work." For once, Roose Bolton's voice was loud enough to carry. "Where was the body found?"
"Under that ruined keep, my lord," replied Big Walder. "The one with the old gargoyles."
The boy's gloves were caked with his cousin's blood.
"I told him not to go out alone, but he said he had to find a man who owed him silver."
"What man?" Ramsay demanded. "Give me his name. Point him out to me, boy, and I will make you a cloak of his skin."
"He never said, my lord, only that he won the coin at dice."
The fray boy hesitated.
"It was some White Harbour men who taught dice. I couldn't say which ones, but it was them."
"My lord," boomed Hustin Frey, "we know the man who did this, killed this boy and all the rest. Not by his own hand, no. He's too fat and craven to do his own killing, but by his word." He turned to Wyman Manderley. "Do you deny it?" The Lord of White Harbour bit her sausage in half. "I confess," he wiped the grease from his lips with his sleeve, "I confess that I know little of this poor boy. Lord Ramsay's squire, was he not? How old was the lad?"
9, on his last name day."
"So young," said Wyman Manderley, "though mayhaps this was a blessing. Had he lived, he would have grown up to be a fray." Sir Hustin slammed his foot into the tabletop, knocking it off its trestles, back into Lord Wyman's swollen belly. Cups and platters flew, sausages scattered everywhere, and a dozen Manderley men came cursing to their feet. Some grabbed up knives, platters, flagons, anything that might serve as a weapon. Sir Hustin Frey ripped his longsword from its scabbard and leapt towards Wyman Manderley. The Lord of White Harbour tried to jerk away, but the tabletop pinned him to his chair. The blade slashed through 3 of his 4 chins in a spray of bright red blood. Lady Walder gave a shriek and clutched at her lord husband's arm. "Stop!" Roose Bolton shouted. "Stop this madness!" His own men rushed forward as the Manderleys vaulted over the benches to get at the frays. One lunged at Sir Hustin with a dagger, but the big knight pivoted and took his arm off at the shoulder. Lord Wyman pushed to his feet, only to collapse. Old Lord Locke was shouting for a maester as Manderley flopped on the floor like a clubbed walrus in a spreading pool of blood. Around him dogs fought over sausages. It took 20 Dreadfort spearmen to part the combatants and put an end to the carnage. By that time, 6 White Harbour men and 2 frays lay dead upon the floor. A dozen more were wounded, and one of the bastard's boys, Luton, was dying noisily, crying for his mother as he tried to shove a fistful of slimy entrails back through a gaping belly wound. Lord Ramsay silenced him, yanking a spear from one of Steelshank's men and driving it down through Luton's chest. Even then, the rafters still rang with shouts and prayers and curses, the shrieks of terrified horses and the growls of Ramsay's bitches. Steelshanks Walton had to slam the butt of his spear against the floor 12 times before the hall quieted enough for Roose Bolton to be heard. "I see you all want blood," the Lord of the Dreadfort said. Maester Rudray stood beside him, a raven on his arm. The bird's black plumage shone like coal oil in the torchlight.
"Wet," Theon realized. "And in his lordship's hand, a parchment. That will be wet as well. Dark wings, dark words."
"Rather than use our swords upon each other, you might try them on Lord Stannis." Lord Bolton unrolled the parchment. "His host lies not 3 days' ride from here,
snowbound and starving, and I for one am tired of waiting on his pleasure. Sir Hustine, assemble your knights and men-at-arms by the main gates. As you are so eager for battle, you shall strike our first blow. Lord Wyman, gather your White Harbour men by the east gate. They shall go forth as well. Hustine Frey's sword was red almost to the hilt. Blood spatter speckled his cheeks like freckles. He lowered his blade and said, "As my lord commands, but after I deliver you the head of Stannis Baratheon, I mean to finish hacking off Lord Lard's." Four White Harbour knights had formed a ring around Lord Wyman, as Maester Medrick laboured over him to staunch his bleeding. "First you must needs come through us, sir," said the eldest of them, a hard-faced greybeard whose blood-stained surcoat showed three silvery mermaids upon a violet field.
"Gladly, one at a time, or all at once, it makes no matter."
"Enough!" roared Lord Ramsay, brandishing his bloody spear. "Another threat, and I'll gut you all myself. My lord father has spoken. Save your wrath for the pretender Stannis." Roose Bolton gave an approving nod. "As he says, there will be time enough to fight each other once we are done with Stannis." He turned his head, his pale, cold eyes searching the hall, until they found the bard Abel beside Theon. "Singer," he called, "come sing us something soothing." Abel bowed.
"If it please your lordship."
Lute in hand, he sauntered to the dais, hopping nimbly over a corpse or two, and seated himself cross-legged on the high table. As he began to play, a sad, soft song that Theon Greyjoy did not recognize, Sir Hustine, Sir Aenys, and their fellow Freys turned away to lead their horses from the hall. Roan grasped Theon's arm.
"The Bess, it must be now."
He wrenched free of her touch.
"By day, we will be seen. The snow will hide us. Are you deaf? Bolton is sending forth his swords. We have to reach King Stannis before they do. But Abel can fend for himself," murmured Squirrel. "This is madness, hopeless, foolish, doomed."
Theon drained the last dregs of his ale and rose reluctantly to his feet.
"Find your sisters. It takes a deal of water to fill my lady's tub."
Squirrel slipped away, soft-footed as she always was. Rowan walked Theon from the hall. Since she and her sisters had found him in the Godswood, one of them had dug his every step, never letting him out of sight. They did not trust him.
"Why should they? I was weak before, and might be weak again. Reek, reek, it rhymes with sneak."
Outside, the snow still fell. The snowmen the squires had built had grown into monstrous giants, 10 feet tall and hideously misshapen. White walls rose to either side as he and Rowan made their way to the Godswood. The paths between keep and tower and hall had turned into a maze of icy trenches, shoveled out early to keep them clear. It was easier to get lost in that frozen labyrinth, but Theon Greyjoy knew every twist and turning. Even the Godswood was turning white. A film of ice had formed upon the pool beneath the heart tree, and the face carved into its pale trunk had grown a moustache of little icicles. At this hour, they could not hope to have the old gods to themselves. Rowan pulled Theon away from the Northmen praying before the tree, to a secluded spot back by the barracks wall, beside a pool of warm mud that stank of rotten eggs. Even the mud was icing up about the edges, Theon saw.
"Winter is coming."
Rowan gave him a hard look.
"You have no right to mouth Lord Eddard's words, not you, not ever, after what you did. You killed a boy as well. That was not us, I told you. Words are wind. They are no better than me. We're just the same. You killed the others, why not him? Yellow Dick, stank as bad as you. A pig of a man.
and Little Walder was a piglet. Killing him brought the Freys and Mendleys to dagger points. That was cunning. You...
Not us.
Roan grabbed him by the throat and shoved him back against the barracks wall, her face an inch from his.
Say it again, and I will rip your lying tongue out, Kinslayer.
He smiled through his broken teeth.
You won't. You need my tongue to get you past the guards. You need my lies.
Rowan spat in his face. Then she let him go and wiped her gloved hands on her legs, as if just touching him had soiled her. Theon knew he should not goad her. In her own way, this one was as dangerous as Skinner or Daemon Dancefor-me. But he was cold and tired. His head was pounding. He had not slept in days.
I have done terrible things. Betrayed my own, turned my cloak, ordered the death of men who trusted me. But I am no kinslayer.
Stark's boys were never brothers to you.
Aye, we know.
That was true, but it was not what Theon had meant.
They were not my blood, but even so, I never armed them. The two we killed were just some miller's sons.
Theon did not want to think about their mother. He had known the miller's wife for years, had even bedded her.
Big, heavy breasts, with wide, dark nipples, a sweet mouth, a merry laugh, joys that I will never taste again.
But there was no use telling Rowan any of that. She would never believe his denials, any more than he believed hers.
There is blood on my hands, but not the blood of brothers, he said wearily, and I've been punished. Not enough,
Rowan turned her back on him.
Foolish woman.
He might well be a broken thing, but Theon still wore a dagger. It would have been a simple thing to slide it out and drive it down between her shoulder blades. That much he was still capable of, missing teeth and broken teeth and all. It might even be a kindness, a quicker, cleaner end than the one she and her sisters would face when Ramsay caught them. Reek might have done it, would have done it, in hopes it might please Lord Ramsay. These whores meant to steal Ramsay's bride. Reek could not allow that. But the old guards had known him, had called him Theon.
Ironborn. I was Ironborn, Balon Greyjoy's son, and rightful heir to Pike.
The stumps of his fingers itched and twitched, but he kept his dagger in its sheath. When Squirrel returned, the other four were with her, gaunt grey-haired Myrtle, Willow Witch-Eye, with her long black braid, Frenya, of the thick waist and enormous breasts, Holly, with her knife, clad as serving girls in layers of drab grey rough spun. They wore brown woolen cloaks lined with white rabbit fur.
No swords, Theon saw. No axes, no hammers, no weapons but knives.
Holly's cloak was fastened with a silver clasp, and Frenya had a girdle of hempen rope wound about her middle, from her hips to breast. It made her look even more massive than she was. Myrtle had servant's garb for Rowan.
"The guards are crawling with fools," she warned them. "They mean to ride out."
"Kneelers," said Willow, with a snort of contempt. "Their lordly lord spoke. They must obey."
"They're going to die," chirped Holly. Happily.
"Them and us," said Theon. "Even if we do get past the guards, how do you mean to get Lady Arya out?"
Holly smiled.
"Six women go in, six come out. Who looks at serving girls? We'll dress the Stark girl up as Squirrel."
Theon glanced at Squirrel.
"They are almost of a size. It might work."
"And how does Squirrel get out?"
Squirrel answered for herself, "Out a window, and straight down to the Godswood. I was 12 the first time my brother took me raiding south of your wall. That's where I got my name. My brother said I looked like a squirrel running up a tree. I've done that wall 6 times since, over and back again. I think I can climb down some stone tower.
"Happy, Turncloak?"
Rowan asked.
"Let's be about it."
Winterfell's cavernous kitchen occupied a building all its own, set well apart from the castle's main halls and keeps in case of fire. Inside, the smells changed hour by hour. An ever-changing perfume of roast meats, leeks and onions, fresh-baked bread. Roose Bolton had posted guards at the kitchen door. With so many mouths to feed, every scrap of food was precious. Even the cooks and potboys were watched constantly. But the guards knew Reek. They liked to taunt him when he came to fetch hot water for Lady Arya's bath. None of them dared go further than that, though. Reek was known to be Lord Ramsay's pet.
"The Prince of Stink is come for some hot water,"
one guard announced when Theon and his serving girls appeared before him. He pushed the door open for them.
"Quick now, before all that sweet warm air escapes."
Within, Theon grabbed a passing potboy by the arm.
"Hot water for my lady boy," he commanded. "Six pails full. And see that it's good and hot. Lord Ramsay wants her pink and clean." "Aye, my lord," the boy said. "At once, my lord."
At once took longer than Theon would have liked. None of the big kettles was clean, so the potboy had to scrub one out before filling it with water. Then it seemed to take forever to come to a rolling boil, and twice forever to fill six wooden pails. All the while, Abel's women waited, their faces shadowed by their cowls. They are doing it all wrong. Real serving girls were always teasing the potboys, flirting with the cooks, wheedling a taste of this, a bite of that. Rowan and her scheming sisters did not want to attract notice. But their sullen silence soon had the guards giving them queer looks.
"Where's Maisie and Jez? And t'other girls?" one asked Theon. "The usual ones."
"Lady Arya was displeased with them," he lied.
"Her water was cold before it reached the tub last time."
The hot water filled the air with clouds of steam, melting the snowflakes as they came drifting down. Back through the maze of ice-walled trenches went the procession. With every slushing step, the water cooled. The passages were clogged with troops, armoured knights in woolen surcoats and fur cloaks, men-at-arms with spears across their shoulders, archers carrying unstrung bows and sheaves of arrows, free-riders, grooms leading war-horses. The Freymen wore the badge of the Two Towers. Those from White Harbour displayed merman and triton. They shouldered through the storm in opposite directions, and eyed each other warily as they passed. But no swords were drawn. Not here. It may be different out there in the woods. Half a dozen seasoned Dreadfort men guarded the doors of the great keep.
"Another bloody bath,"
said the sergeant when he saw the pails of steaming water.
He had his hands chucked up into his armpits against the cold. "She had a bath last night. How dirty can one woman get in her own bed?"
"Dirtier than you know, when you share that bed with Ramsay," Theon thought, remembering the wedding night and the things that he and Jane had been made to do.
"Lord Ramsay's command." "Get in there, then, before the water freezes," the sergeant said.
Two of the guards pushed open the double doors. The entryway was nigh as cold as the air outside. Holly kicked snow from her boots and lowered the hood of her cloak.
"I thought that would be harder."
Her breath frosted the air.
"There are more guards upstairs at my lord's bedchamber," Theon warned her. "Ramsay's men."
He dare not call them the bastard's boys, not here. You never knew who might be listening.
"Keep your heads down and your hoods up." "Do as he says, Holly," Rowan said. "There's someone know your face. We don't need that trouble."
Theon led the way up the stairs. "I have climbed these steps 1,000 times before." As a boy, he would run up. Descending, he would take the steps 3 at a time, leaping.
Once he leapt right into old Nan and knocked her to the floor. That earned him the worst thrashing he ever had at Winterfell, though it was almost tender compared to the beatings his brothers used to give him back on Pike. He and Rob had fought many a heroic battle on these steps, slashing at one another with wooden swords. Good training, that. It brought home how hard it was to fight your way up a spiral stair against determined opposition. Sir Roderick liked to say that one good man could hold 100 fighting down. That was long ago, though. They were all dead now. Jory, old Sir Roderick, Lord Eddard, Harwin and Holland, Cain and Desmond and Fat Tom, Alan with his dreams of knighthood, Micken, who had given him his first real sword, even old Nan, like as not, and Rob. Rob, who had been more a brother to Theon than any son born of Balin Greyjoy's loins. Murdered at a red wedding, butchered by the Freys. I should have been with him. Where was I? I should have died with him. Theon stopped so suddenly that Willow almost ploughed into his back. The door to Ramsay's bedchamber was before him, and guarding it were two of the bastard's boys, Sir Alan and Grunt. The old guards must wish us well. Grunt had no tongue, and Sir Alan had no wits, Lord Ramsay liked to say. One was brutal, the other mean, but both had spent most of their lives in service at the Dreadfort. They did as they were told. "I have hot water for the Lady Arya," Theon told them. "Try a wash yourself, Reek," said Sir Alan. "You smell like horse piss." Grunt grunted in agreement. Or perhaps that noise was meant to be a laugh. But Alan unlocked the door to the bedchamber, and Theon waved the women through. No day had dawned inside this room. Shadows covered all. One last log crackled feebly amongst the dying embers in the hearth, and a candle flickered on the table beside a rumpled, empty bed. "The girl is gone," Theon thought. "She has thrown herself out a window in despair." But the windows here were shuttered against the storm, sealed up by crusts of blown snow and frost. "Where is she?" Holly asked. Her sisters emptied their pails into the big round wooden tub. Frenya shut the chamber door and put her back against it. "Where is she?" Holly said again. Outside a horn was blowing. "A trumpet. The Freys. Assembling for battle." Theon could feel an itching in his missing fingers. Then he saw her. She was huddled in the darkest corner of the bedchamber, on the floor, curled up in a ball beneath a pile of wolf skins. Theon might never have spotted her but for the way she trembled. Jane had pulled the furs up over herself to hide. "From us? Or was she expecting a lord husband?" The thought that Ramsay might be coming made him want to scream. "My lady," Theon could not bring himself to call her Arya, and dare not call her Jane. "No need to hide. These are friends." The fur stirred. An eye peered out, shining with tears. Dark, too dark, a brown eye. "Theon?"
"Lady Arya," Rowan moved closer, "you must come with us, and quickly. We've come to take you to your brother."
"Brother?"
The girl's face emerged from underneath the wolfskins.
I have no brothers."
"She has forgotten who she is. She has forgotten her name."
"That's so," said Theon. "But you had brothers once. 3 of them, Rob and Bran and Rickon." "They're dead. I have no brothers now."
"You have a half-brother," Rowan said. "Lord Crow he is."
"Jon Snow?"
"We'll take you to him, but you must come at once."
Jane pulled her wolfskins up to her chin.
"No, this is some trick. It's him. It's my
My lord, my sweet lord, he sent you. This is just some test to make sure that I love him. I love him more than anything.
A tear ran down her cheek.
Tell him, you tell him. I'll do what he wants, whatever he wants, with him or with the dog, or please. He doesn't need to cut my feet off. I won't try to run away, not ever. I'll give him sons. I swear it.
Rowan whistled softly. God's curse the man.
I'm a good girl, Jane whimpered. They trained me.
Willow scowled. Someone stop her crying.
That guard was mute, not deaf. They're going to hear.
Get her up. Turn cloak. Holly had her knife in hand. Get her up, or I will. We have to go. Get that little cunt up on her feet and shake some courage into her.
And if she screams, said Rowan.
We are all dead, Theon thought. I told them this was folly, but none of them would listen. Abel had doomed them. All singers were half mad. In songs the hero always saved the maiden from the monster's castle. But life was not a song, no more than Jane was Arya Stark.
Her eyes are the wrong colour, and there are no heroes here, only whores.
Even so, he knelt beside her, pulled down the furs, touched her cheek.
You know me. I'm Theon. You remember? I know you too. I know your name.
My name? She shook her head.
My name, it's...
He put a finger to her lips.
We can talk about that later. You need to be quiet now. Come with us, with me. We will take you away from here, away from him.
Her eyes widened.
Please, she whispered. Oh, please.
Theon slipped his hand through hers. The stumps of his lost fingers tingled as he drew the girl to her feet. The wolfskins fell away from her. Underneath them, she was naked, her small pale breasts covered with teeth marks. He heard one of the women suck in her breath. Rowan thrust a bundle of clothes into his hands.
Get her dressed. It's cold outside.
Squirrel had stripped down to her small clothes and was rooting through a carved cedar chest in search of something warmer. In the end, she settled for one of Lord Ramsay's quilted doublets and a well-worn pair of breeches that flapped about her legs like a ship's sails in a storm. With Rowan's help, Theon got Jane Poole into Squirrel's clothes.
If the gods are good and the gods are blind, she may pass.
Now we are going out and down the steps, Theon told the girl. Keep your head down and your hood up. Follow Holly. Don't run, don't cry, don't speak. Don't look anyone in the eye.
Stay close to me, Jane said. Don't leave me.
I will be right beside you, Theon promised, as Squirrel slipped into Lady Arya's bed and pulled the blanket up. Frenya pulled open the bedchamber door.
You give her a good wash, Reek? Asked Sir Alum as they emerged.
Grunt gave Willow's breast a squeeze as she went by. They were fortunate in his choice. If the man had touched Jane, she might have screamed. Then Holly would have opened his throat for him with a knife hidden up her sleeve. Willow simply twisted away and passed him. For a moment Theon felt almost giddy.
They never looked. They never saw. We walked the girl right by them.
But on the steps the fear returned. What if they met Skinner, or Daemon Dancefromme, or Steelshanks Walton, or Ramsay himself?
God save me, not Ramsay, anyone but him.
What use was it to smuggle the girl out of her bedchamber? They were still inside the castle, with every gate closed and barred, and the battlements thick with sentries. Like as not, the guards outside the keep would stop them. Holly and her knife would be of small use against 6 men in mail with swords and spears. But the guards outside were huddled by the doors, backs turned against the icy wind and blown snow. Even the sergeant did not spare them more than a quick glance. Theon felt a stab of pity for him and his men. Ramsay would flay them all when he learned his bride was gone. And what he would do to Grunt and Sir Alan did not bear thinking about. Not 10 yards from the door, Rowan dropped her empty pail, and her sisters did likewise. The great keep was already lost to sight behind them. The yard was a white wilderness, full of half-heard sounds that echoed strangely amidst the storm. The icy trenches rose around them, knee-high, then waist-high, then higher than their heads. They were in the heart of Winterfell, with the castle all around them, but no sign of it could be seen. They might have easily been lost amidst the land of always winter, 1,000 leagues beyond the wall.
"It's cold," Jane Poole whimpered as she stumbled along at Theon's side. "And soon to be colder."
Beyond the castle walls, winter was waiting with its icy teeth.
"If we get that far."
"This way," he said, when they came to a junction where 3 trenches crossed.
"Frenya, Ollie, go with them," Rowan said. "We will be along with Abel. Do not wait for us."
And with that, she whirled and plunged into the snow toward the great hall. Willow and Myrtle hurried after her, cloaks snapping in the wind.
"Madder and madder," thought Theon Greyjoy.
Escape had seemed unlikely with all 6 of Abel's women. With only 2, it seemed impossible. But they had gone too far to return the girl to her bedchamber and pretend none of this had ever happened. Instead, he took Jane by the arm and drew her down the pathway to the battlement's gate.
"Only a half-gate," he reminded himself. "Even if the guards let us pass, there is no way through the outer wall."
On other nights, the guards had allowed Theon through, but all those times he'd come alone. He would not pass so easily, with 3 serving girls in tow, and if the guards looked beneath Jane's hood and recognized Lord Ramsay's bride. The passage twisted to the left. There before them, behind a veil of falling snow, yawned the battlement's gate, flanked by a pair of guards. In their wool and fur and leather, they looked as big as bears. The spears they held were 8 feet tall.
"Who goes there?"
one called out. Theon did not recognize the voice. Most of the man's features were covered by the scarf about his face. Only his eyes could be seen.
"Reek, is that you?"
"Yes," he meant to say. Instead, he heard himself reply,
"Theon Greyjoy, I have brought some women for you."
"You poor boys must be freezing," said Holly. "Here, let me warm you up."
She slipped past the guard's spear point and reached up to his face, pulling loose the half-frozen scarf to plant a kiss upon his mouth, and as their lips touched, her blade slid through the meat of his neck, just below the ear. Theon saw the man's eyes widen. There was blood on Holly's lips as she stepped back, and blood dribbling from his mouth as he fell. The second guard was still gaping in confusion when Frenya grabbed the shaft of his spear. They struggled for a moment, tugging, till the woman wrenched the weapon from his fingers and clouted him across the temple with its butt. As he stumbled backwards, she spun the spear around and drove its point through his belly with a grunt. Jane Poole let out a shrill, high scream.
"Oh, bloody shit," said Holly. "That will bring the Kneelers down on us, and no mistake. Run!"
Theon clapped one hand around Jane's mouth, grabbed her about the waist with the other, and pulled her past the dead and dying guards, through the gate and over the frozen moat. And perhaps the old guards were still watching over them. The drawbridge had been left down to allow Winterfell's defenders to cross to and from the outer battlements more quickly. From behind them came alarums and the sound of running feet, then the blast of a trumpet from the ramparts of the inner wall. On the drawbridge, Frenya stopped and turned.
"Go on! I will hold the Kneelers here!"
The bloody spear was still clutched in her big hands. Theon was staggering by the time he reached the foot of the stair. He slung the girl over his shoulder and began to climb. Jane had ceased to struggle by then, and she was such a little thing besides. But the steps were slick with ice beneath soft, powdery snow, and halfway up he lost his footing and went down hard on one knee. The pain was so bad he almost lost the girl, and for half a heartbeat he feared this was as far as he would go. But Holly pulled him back onto his feet, and between the two of them they finally got Jane up to the battlements. As he leaned up against the Merlin, breathing hard, Theon could hear the shouting from below, where Frenya was fighting half a dozen guardsmen in the snow.
"Which way?" he shouted at Holly. "Where do we go now? How do we get out?"
The fury on Holly's face turned to horror.
"Oh, fuck me bloody, the rope!" She gave a hysterical laugh. "Frenya has the rope!"
Then she grunted and grabbed her stomach. A quarrel had sprouted from her gut. When she wrapped a hand around it, blood leaked through her fingers.
"Kneelers, on the inner wall,"
she gasped, before a second shaft appeared between her breasts. Holly grabbed for the nearest Merlon and fell. The snow that she'd knocked loose buried her with a soft thump. Shouts rang out from their left. Jane Poole was staring down at Holly as the snowy blanket over her turned from white to red. On the inner wall, Lacrosse Bowman would be reloading, Theon knew. He started right, but there were men coming from that direction too, racing toward them with swords in hand. Far off to the north, he heard a war horn sound.
"Stannis," he thought wildly. "Stannis is our only hope, if we can reach him."
The wind was howling, and he and the girl were trapped. The crossbow snapped. A bolt passed within a foot of him, shattering the crust of frozen snow that had plugged the closest crenel. Of Abel, Rowan, Squirrel, and the others there was no sign. He and the girl were alone.
"If they take us alive, they will deliver us to Ramsay."
Theon grabbed Jane about the waist and jumped. Daenerys. The sky was a merciless blue, without a wisp of cloud in sight.
"Ah, the bricks will soon be baking in the sun," thought Danny. "Down on the sands the fighters will feel the heat through the soles of their sandals."
Jiqui slipped Danny's silk robe from her shoulders, and Eri helped her into her bathing pool. The light of the rising sun shimmered on the water, broken by the shadow of the persimmon tree.
"Even if the pits must open, must your grace go yourself?"
asked Missandei, as she was washing the queen's hair.
"Half of Meereen will be there to see me, gentle heart."
"Your grace," said Missandei, "this one begs leave to say that half of Meereen will be there to watch men bleed and die."
"She is not wrong," the queen knew, "but it makes no matter."
Soon Danny was as clean as she was ever going to be. She pushed herself to her feet, splashing softly. Water ran down her legs and beaded on her breasts. The sun was climbing up the sky, and her people would soon be gathering. She would rather have drifted in the fragrant pool all day, eating ice fruit off silver trays, and dreaming of a house with a red door. But a queen belongs to her people, not to herself. Jiqui brought a soft towel to pat her dry.
"Khaleesi, which tokar will you want today?" asked Eri.
"The yellow silk."
The queen of the rabbits could not be seen without her floppy ears. The yellow silk was light and cool, and it would be blistering down in the pit.
"The red sands will burn the souls of those about to die. And over it, the long red veils."
The veils would keep the wind from blowing sand into her mouth.
"And the red will hide any blood spatters."
Ajikwe brushed Danny's hair, and Eri painted the queen's nails. They chatted happily about the day's matches. Missandei reemerged.
"Your grace, The king bids you join him when you are dressed. And Prince Quentin has come with his Dornish